I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars, big fights, and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting men who call to die to me. If you don't love and lead it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my countrymen, you're walking on the fighting side of me. The guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a part of dynasty. If you don't love it, leave it. Love this song I'm singing, be warned. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a fog that I keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
When you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program.
Rogers, we believe in resistance radio.com.
Lots more news and views. We've got to stop this. Lots more news and views for our people. Crystals are European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and of course, all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. I'm recording this on Friday, Wednesday, and that was the 16th. We in the Toronto area said goodbye to our friend Ernst Sundel. We had a memorial, and it was a packed room, well attended by many of his old friends who battled with him. During the tumultuous days of the 1980s and 90s and really into the 2000s. It was a really a moving event. I did an overview of Ernst's life and importance, and of course, in about a half hour talk, you can't, lots is left out. And I talked a lot about him before. He was a determined leader in Canada as the head of concerned parents of German descent to try to get justice for Germans. Right. After the new religion of Holocaust was invented, or let's say highlighted with the television series by that name, Holocaust, the Holocaust, many German children in Canada became the victims of stupid teachers and classroom mocking and bullying. And it was on the basis of a lot of lies. Teachers said, the Germans, or you Germans in some cases, killed 6 million Jews, or you Germans, the Germans, not the German government, the German government, the National Socialist government, but you Germans did these terrible things. Well, this is what happened. Ignorant teachers and people who generalized caused a lot of harm. Now, Ernst, of course, led the parents through various campaigns against school boards, against anti-German movies like The Boys from Brazil, against the German bashing of the Toronto Sun. And he began to realize that this was different from other cases, that if this had been a different misunderstood group, he could probably have gotten fairer treatment. But in many people's minds was this, I might not always say it, but in their minds was the following: you Germans deserve it because you killed 6 million Jews. And now, even some reasonable people who believe in this new religion of Holocaust would say, it's not fair to blame a 7-year-old kid for something that their parents didn't do. Maybe their grandparents may have had some of it being in the war somehow, but it's just not fair. Anyway, but many people would say, well, in some ways they deserve it. Germans are different. And Ernst often said that. There's one law for everybody else, and then there's a different law and a harsher law for, in some cases, Germans. In other cases, Ernst Sundel. So that was what really led him into the study of the Holocaust, so-called Holocaust, and efforts to set history straight. And it was difficult. New religion, and it's a religion. It's not a historical account. It's a religion. It's based on faith. And I say that because the major tenets of this new religion are essentially based on faith. They can't be established as fact. And one of the first non-facts he went after with the pamphlet that made him so hated and which caused so much of a stir was something he didn't himself write. It was called Did 6 Million Really Die? And this was distributed en masse in Canada to politicians of all levels, lawyers, judges, leading professionals, media, and so on. And because what Ernst was trying to do was to say that this largely false accusation laid at the feet of the German people is unfair. But the new religion of Holocaust is wrong. And thus began battles that would lead to 7 years in prison. Not that he was ever charged in Canada, not that he was ever convicted in Canada for his views. He was eventually sent to jail for 2 years while he awaited a hearing when he was hit with a national security certificate alleging that he was a threat to national security, and all of this was based on secret evidence, very little of which we were able to fully know or challenge. And I've talked about his life before, so I won't go over all of that again. But at our memorial yesterday, we like to blend talks and music, and I invited two of our great movement musicians, Dieter Kohl, and Dieter played the accordion and played such great classic songs as Die Gedanken sind frei, and this is a song that actually goes back to the Napoleonic Wars, and it says thoughts are free. You know, you can jail cannot stop them. The hunters, gunshots will not stop them. Thoughts are free. And you know, it's a very simple, direct appeal to human decency and courage, that they may cause us great trouble. In Ernst case, it cost him millions of dollars in legal fees. And sure, he raised some, he did. But he spent an awful lot of his own money, to say nothing of himself. And that's the thing that, you know, if you've never been through a crisis like that, if you've never been charged before a court of law, if you've never had to actually fight your way to get into court, because the psychopaths of the Zio, the Zio supremacists are standing out in front of the court building, shoving at you, and so on, that you have to try to get through their lines with your own bodyguards to appear in court. And that was always something that mystified me. And it would happen, this was in 1984, and it would mystify me over a decade later, when in the early 90s, the Heritage Front, which was then facing a human rights tribunal because of its telephone answering machine. I know by today's terms, you think I'm almost talking of the horse and buggy or earlier. But back in 1991 and 2 and 3, the telephone answering machine was a brand new, almost state-of-the-art form of communication. Back in those days, you would take your telephone answering machine and you'd record a political message. And I'm not sure that they were the first to do this, but a group in the United States called the John Birch Society popularized that with a program that they called Let Freedom Ring. And what they would do is they would ask their chapters, and they had chapters all across the United States. They even had a few in Canada. They'd ask the chapter leaders to get a dedicated telephone and get a telephone answering machine, because in those days you couldn't actually do it through your telephone company. Today, with our technology, most of us actually don't have a telephone answering machine anymore. It's an additional service you pay your telephone carrier $2 for, or $3 for a month, and it's done for you. But anyway, in those days, you got a telephone answering machine, and the John Birch Society would supply you with, I think it was a monthly message, and there would be an audio cassette tape. It would be mailed out from Boston, Massachusetts, from Belmont, Massachusetts, where their headquarters were. And these local groups would have that on their telephone, their dedicated telephone, and they would advertise the number. Well, the same thing happened in Canada. That was the Heritage Front had just such a thing. And they'd hand out business cards, and people would learn their number, and they would change the political message every few days. And the Heritage Front did. And this was the same battle that Ernst Zundel fought only earlier. It was not actually on a telephone answering machine. Later, in the mid-1990s, actually 1997, he would be charged under the same law, which talked about telephonic communications, repeated telephonic communications likely to expose to hatred or to contempt a privileged group, in this case Jews, in his case. In these interesting battles, many good people came together. And in my talk, I reflected on that, and I know I left a lot out. We started the program. I wandered a little bit from the music, the point of the music. And the point of the music was thoughts are free. And this is a battle all through Ernst Zundel's political life in Canada and later in Germany that he had to fight to secure or to push back against the forces of repression and censorship. And it's all about freedom of speech. And so we really cherish this song, and I'm going to play it as part of the musical interlude today. The thoughts are free. And there's something soaring about brave men and women and the human spirit. So we started the program not with my talk, but with Dieter Kahl playing the rousing Digga Dunkinson's Fry, The Thoughts Are Free. And we then had a longtime Ernst Zundel supporter, Blago Semyonov, and his wife playing a short musical production that they had done in Ernst's honor, and a song that Blago wrote way back in 2003 when we, the Canadian Association for Free Expression, held a number of demonstrations or protests outside the Metro West Detention Center when Ernst Zundel was incarcerated in solitary confinement, at times denied medical care, as he awaited a national security certificate hearing as they tried to deport him because he was not a Canadian citizen. He was a landed immigrant, but not a citizen. And they tried to deport him as a threat to national security. And Lago's song was, "There Is Some Hope." And sometimes when you're battling the bandit state, the immoral powers of big government, the uncaring powers, and of course, the lies. And that probably is what hurts almost as much as anything, the lies of the mass media, which, you know, I think many of us were aware of. I mean, we lived with that almost all our political lives. But I think one of the great things Donald Trump has done as president is that he has pinpointed, repeatedly pinpointed, both as a candidate and as a president, the fact that the media are liars. Not all of them and not all the time, but that the media repeatedly lies. And there's times when one can be very discouraged when you see yourself identified as a neo-Nazi. And my good friend Dr. James Sears says he doesn't like that term neo-Nazi. Well, I don't either for a whole bunch of reasons, but the reason he says he doesn't like it is because he says it has the connotation of a street thug kicking somebody in the head on the sidewalk, a guy with the Doc Martin boots and shaved head and so on. I don't know if that's the connotation or not, but it definitely is a smear. And while I know some National Socialists, they would never call themselves Nazis, because Nazi is a term of abuse invented back in the 1920s by the German National Socialist Workers' Party, invented by their enemies. Why would you call yourself by a name that's an insult? Well, you know, if you're sensible or proud, you wouldn't anyway. Blogger saw is quite inspirational. There is some hope. After that, we had a number of people speak. Max French was a leading member of the Heritage Front. He knew Ernst Zundel very well, and he spoke movingly of Ernst's leadership and brought us greetings from some Russian patriots. Another speaker was Jürgen Neumann, and Jürgen came to Ernst in the 80s as a construction worker, and he would take, when he ever found himself unemployed, he'd be down at Zundel House doing various tasks, acting as a bodyguard, taking care of security, because initially Ernst was not very security conscious, and Ernst was attacked numerous times early in the, I think still in the early 80s, the JDL placed some sort of a small bomb out behind Zundel's residence at 207 Carlton Street, which became known as the Zundel House, H-A-U-S in German. Then as the trials got going, there was the security for Zundel himself. In fact, at times he wore a bulletproof vest, sometimes having to actually shove, fight to get into the court. Past menacing, rowdy, largely Jewish protesters. And anyway, Jürgen said that over the years, as Ernst became aware of what was then a new technology, that was the video, Ernst, being a great communicator, got into it. And so they didn't have a videographer, but Jürgen trained as a videographer on the job, learned and accompanied Ernst on, made all sorts of videos of various events, including meetings at Ernst's place, and the famed trip into 1988 by Fred Leuchter from Massachusetts to Auschwitz, and where he and a translator and bodyguard and assistants all videotaped by Jürgen explored the Auschwitz to determine whether there had been the use there of Zyklon B. And it's a long, complicated thing. What Fred Leuchter, who was an expert in execution technology, he designed execution devices for a number of American prisons, what he concluded was that whatever happened at Auschwitz, there was no evidence of the Zyklon B, or the, which was one of the major methodologies in the Holocaust religion that apparently was used to exterminate large numbers of people, mostly Jews. So it was a huge hole in the story. And Jürgen said, you know, when I came to Ernst at first, I was probably rather immature. And Ernst Zundel taught me what it was to be a man. And I thought, you know, you can pay a man a lot of tributes, but that one is, I thought, very moving, very specific. And Ernst also passed on sexual advice, as he was wont to do. And he had apparently told Jürgen and the other young guys there, be careful whom you sleep with, because you may make that woman pregnant. And then it will be your duty to marry them, to raise the child. Ernst was a pretty straight arrow in terms of his morality. And he said, you know, before you sleep with a woman, make sure, to the best of your knowledge, she's one that you could see spending the next 20 years of your life with. Kind of good advice. And, you know, there's so many things, political things that I have said and I will say again about Ernst, but you know, to understand his character, there are these other aspects. And Jürgen gave an extremely moving talk. Sidney White is a longtime lecturer on conspiracy matters and political propaganda at the University of Toronto Free School. That is, the lectures are free. She's a regular on Monday nights during the regular academic year. And she gave a moving discussion of the importance of freedom of speech. I mean, that's what Ernst Zundel was all about. That was very effective. And I read greetings from a number of people, including Lady Michelle Renouf in England. Lady Michelle has a house that used to belong to German patriot leader Manfred Roeder in Hessen. More or less, to locate that, locate Frankfurt on the map, and it's about 60 miles from Frankfurt. Anyway, she owns this place, and from time to time, people gather there, and she said that on the day after Manfred Roeder, who had been viciously maligned in the German press for years, the day after he died, there was slogans and vandalism at Haus Richberg. And the day after Ernst Zundel passed away on August the 5th. So the next day, similarly, there was vandalism there. You know, even though Ernst had actually never owned or had anything to do with House Richburg, but vileness of some of our the enemies of freedom really is pretty powerful. We got greetings from wonderful people like Malcolm Ross in New Brunswick, and so I would read those in between talks. Don Andrews, who was a longtime activist in the Toronto area, going back actually with me to the founding of the Edinburgh Society in 1967. He's the head of a national party group, and he spoke about Ernst and about his tremendous admiration for him and his courage and his real love for this man. And we had a guest from overseas. She's a woman who was a gifted translator. She translated for on tours of Japan for people like David Icke, for Manfred Rother, for American Free Press, American Free Press and her Barnes Review author Michael Collins Piper, and her name was Grace Eki Oyama. And she offered us some interesting thoughts. She had met Ernst, never in Canada, but in Germany. She drew a very interesting, coincidence, if you like, or maybe it's not a coincidence. And that was that Ernst passed away on August 5th. In Japan, though, it would be August 6th. And August 6th was that day in 1945 that the Americans dropped the first atomic bomb on Hiroshima. Interesting coincidence? Well, perhaps so. And then yesterday, August the 16th, is an important day in Japan. It's the day on which Japanese often go back to their family homes, and they visit the graves of their dead. Often, you know, clean them up or you know, spruce them up or take care of them, and they honor the spirits of their ancestors, and that too has been part of Aryan tradition, revering our ancestors, our families. And this is the feast of the festival of Obon, O-B-O-N, and she noted that there was this interesting parallel that Ernst died on the anniversary of Hiroshima, the atomic bomb, and that we were saying goodbye to our friend on the day that the Japanese people traditionally honor the dead. It was a kind of an interesting, moving touch. I also asked people to, if they had any memorabilia of Ernst, to bring it along and share it with people as we mingled socially over coffee and beer, tell people what it was. And Ernst, when he was in prison, particularly in Canada, during the false news, during the national security certificate hearing, was only allowed to have pencils. Black pencils, of course, and he wasn't allowed to have child's colored pencils. So he was a very gifted artist, and he would draw designs, kind of uplifting. Some would be nature scenes, some would be eagles, often with a slogan, or sometimes just saying thanks. And he would say thanks in English and French and German and Spanish. And people showed around what they received from Ernst. Ernst, of course, was also not only a great graphic artist and made a lot of money before his political involvements, but he was also a gifted artist, painter. And I brought one of his paintings to show. And another person brought a Ernst Sundel hard hat. And during that first Sundel trial, one big issue, well, security was an issue. People had to shove and actually fight to get into the court. I must say, in the world of the irrational, this is a little hard to figure. Why would the enemies of free speech, who now had gotten Ernst Sundel before court, which could have sent him to jail, why would they want to prevent him from going to court? Presumably, they would want him to go to court, not miss it. Anyway, Ernst, with his typical flair for the visual, equipped his supporters with yellow hard hats, which of course photographed very well. And one of those was brought and shown. And it was a great time for, as I think, when you honor a great man, a man with great fighting spirit, you discover a little bit about yourself, and you discover a little bit about others, some of whom you knew years ago, some of whom you didn't. And you share a commonality. And I would say many of us left that meeting, that memorial yesterday, with a sense of joy. The sense of joy of just having won the lottery or anything quite like that, but the celebration of a good man, and the celebration of doing something, of honoring someone. There's a sense of having done right. That was something that I think united us. It was really a very moving moment. Well, the song I mentioned that our accordionist Dieter played was an old German folk song called "Thought Die Gedanken sind frei," or "Thoughts Are Free." And this is a version sung in English and German by Destiny Cross. "Thoughts Are Free." This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me.
I think My thoughts will burst free like blossoms in season. Foundations will crumble and structures will tumble and freemen will cry. Bigger bargains and pride.
And that's a beautiful song by Destiny Cross, or a very beautiful version of the song, Deacon Duncanson Fry, by Destiny. We're trying to. we do have our troubles with technology, don't we? Anyway, what I'm trying to get here is. A tribute that's put together by Dr. Robert Forson, good friend and advisor to Ernst Sundell. You'll like the music if you like.
Thank you.
That's a musical tribute to Ernst Sundell. If you would like, it's actually it's the music that accompanies a photo collage brought together by Dr. Robert Forrest. So if you'd like me to send that to you, just email me at paul@paulfromm.com. And to conclude our musical interlude and tribute to Ernst Sundell, and this is a bit of a continuation of the tribute we had in Toronto yesterday, the 16th of August, we're going to play the German National Anthem. Now, as in Canada, we're always forever monkeying with our official national anthem. That's O Canada. It's not the one I play. I always play the Maple Leaf Forever, but they're always changing the words to make them more and more and more politically correct. Well, in Germany, the words of the national anthem have been changed so often that they're actually only allowed to sing one verse, I believe, because the other verses talk about uniting Germany. Well, the politically correct in Germany don't believe in that anymore. They're quite happy to have hunks of German territory, like in the Sudetenland and Pomerania and Silesia and East Prussia hacked away, and that was what happened after World War II. Anyway, this is the German national anthem, Deutschland über alles, which literally translated means Germany above others, or put it in colloquial modern day English, Germany first. Say, hey, that's a good nationalistic sentiment. You know, your own country first. Why? Well, the opposite is somebody else's country first. And that's a problem. In fact, that's one of the problems many of us have with the undue influence of the Zionist lobby in Canada, in the United States particularly, but also in Canada and elsewhere. They put another country first. And it's not the United States or whatever. Well, this is Deutschland über alles. Hope you like it. And that's the, those are the words of the German national anthem, Deutschland, Deutschland, über alles, or loosely translated, Germany First. And these three songs were a tribute to the man we said goodbye to in a great memorial yesterday in Toronto, the late Ernst Zundel, historical revisionist, artist, and a great fighter for the honor of the German people. Well, we have many current fights. I was meeting a good supporter today, and he handed me a handful of offensive things. Here's a little propaganda sheet about OSAP. Now that's the Ontario Student Assistance Program. So these are loans usually for university or community college students. All right, fine. Won't go into the details of it, but here's this little brochure. You've got two black students. Okay, yeah, there are black students in Ontario, not denying that, but why must they be black? Blacks constitute maybe 500,000 people in a province of over 11 million. In other words, they're 5% of the population. Okay, well, I suppose you could say, well, that would be part of our reality. All right, that's one government document. Here's Ontario's Fair Hydro Plan. It's more propaganda for the Ontario government. It's all about hydro. And here's another family. I'm going to say they're black. They could be East Indian, but probably black. And there they are, and they've got their little colored child, and it's looking at a computer, a laptop screen, and they're grinning, and this is, I guess, a typical Ontario couple, and this little flyer is going to tell them how they can benefit from, it's kind of a corrupt thing, but anyway, the latest overpricing schemes by the Ontario government of our hydro. But, you know, once again, a tiny portion of the population is there in government propaganda. Alrighty, what else did you give me? Oh, this Government of Canada. Get your benefit and credit information anytime, anywhere. This is from the Canada Revenue Agency. See your payments right away. Sign up for Canada Revenue Agency's online services. And they give you a web page. And who is doing this on her cell phone? A Negro woman. Okay, well, I don't deny there are Negroes in Canada, but once again, about population of Canada, I doubt they even top 2%. And what do we have here? Oh, yes, it's not just government. Corporations like to remind us that we're being dispossessed. When they're not promoting their total attachment to pride, that's not pride in being Canadians, but pride in what orifice you use sexually. That's they mean the gay pride. The banks, here's the Scotia Bank. Go paperless for a chance to win a $10,000 prize. Well, we're not particularly interested in, you know, what that is, but and there is your, I guess, typical young couple, two Negroes. She's got her arm around him, and he's plunking away at a laptop. I think people should protest. Now, I don't mean to suggest that none of these outfits should ever show anybody other than white people. I have a sense of fairness. However, what they show increasingly is a manipulative agenda. They want to condition us, and that's kind of important. They want to condition us for the new order where we will be replaced. Whites will be a minority. Now, you would think that government should be responsive, not manipulative, and that businesses should, maybe deal with business. Isn't that an unusual concept? Rather than, in a sense, social engineering. or bring tenderizing us for the future they want. Not a future we ever asked for. Never actually, not a future we've ever even had a say about. Well, here is a disturbing trend or a disturbing development in the aftermath of the establishment meltdown and hysteria. First of all, over the power of the alt-right protest in Charlottesville last Saturday, but also after some wanderings about and meanderings, Donald Trump's for them outrageous statement that the radical left played a role in it too. In fact, they had no parade permit and they attacked the alt-right. Now, he still laid some responsibility on at the feet of the alt-right, but the very fact that he said there was actually two sides to it, this has them outraged beyond all measure, because of course the narrative was white's bad, the minority's good. And he's simply refused to play that game. Well, some corporations are now weighing in to try to punish white activists. The elites in our society, heavily committed to replacing white people and expanding soulless globalism, are in a panic because of national activity and groups. Of course, these groups are defamed as white supremacists or neo-Nazis. A new cyber dark age has descended, and this is a quote from Bloomberg, a new cyber dark age has descended upon the internet as Apple, Airbnb, Facebook, and other tech companies have decided that neo-Nazis must be banned from everything. Tech companies are the new thought police of America. After watching usernames to posts on social media profiles, Airbnb canceled dozens of reservations made by self-identified Nazis. I don't think they identify themselves as Nazis, but after all, this is Bloomberg, who are using its app to find rooms in Charlottesville, where they were heading to protest the removal of Confederate statue. Uber is now telling drivers they don't have to pick up racists. PayPal is revoking payment services to sites that promote racial intolerance, reports Bloomberg. And Discover Financial Services, the credit card company, said this week that it was ending its agreement with hate groups. These corporate thought police will be remembered. A new order will find ways to punish them for corporate irresponsibility and wholesale violation of white people's rights. And I'm not very keen on making threats. First of all, I don't like making threats I can't follow through on. I don't would never make a threat about something that's illegal. But I do think it's worth people putting in the minds of these bullies that their day may come, that should the power shift, they will be remembered for having betrayed white people, for having persecuted people for nothing more than the nonviolent expression of their views. And of course, I cringe when I see the criteria. Nazis, racists. Oh, what's a racist? I know. Somebody who believes in Israel first. Oh, no, they don't mean those people. Okay. Hate groups. Well, what's a hate group? In the United States, that isn't even a legal definition. All too often, a hate group is what a group of far left, anti-white, anti-free speech people at the Southern Poverty Law Center say it is. One cringes at the implications. And this is definitely something that I think users should get across to the corporate executives of these companies. We take our freedom seriously. And if you have lined up to hurt people because of the nonviolent expressions of their political views, we will remember you. I don't consider that a threat. I think that's just common sense.
we will remember you, and we will take measures when we gain more power to punish you for that, for corporate irresponsibility. And I hope the day will come when the victims will have the right to sue for a violation of their civil rights. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com.